The day will come when, after harnessing space, the winds, the tides, and gravitation, we shall harness for God the energies of love, and on that day, for the second time in the history of the world, we shall have discovered fire. Pierre Teilhard de Chardin. A Personal Story by Dr. Neil F. Nymark. I have devoted my life to caring for the health of others. As a family doctor, I help many patients with physical problems that actually stem from difficulties in their emotional, psychological, and spiritual lives. One would be hard-pressed to find a psychologist, a medical doctor, and a clergy person sharing the same office, but in order to really help patients, we as family doctors must become all three. When it comes to health, the distinction between physical, psychological, and spiritual is often blurred. I first became interested in the mind-body connection when I became physically ill during my internship in family practice. As an intern, I remember being overwhelmed by the rigors of the work schedule, being up all night every third evening, working over 100-hour weeks, and never having time to sit down uninterrupted for a meal or a moment of rest. In addition to the hectic schedule, I felt homesick, having left behind very dear family and friends in Ohio to begin a new life as an intern in Baltimore. Though I made new friends and acquaintances, I missed my old friends and family, the ones who really knew me, understood me, and made me laugh. The busier my schedule became, the more I missed the support, friendship, and love of those people who were such a vital part of my past life. I felt isolated, alone, and overworked. One morning in my third month of internship, after a particularly busy night of call, having had little to no sleep, I woke up in the hospital with a curiously deep feeling of sadness. I was exhausted. I felt alone. I looked at the time on my beeper, thought of the day ahead, and began to cry. Tears fell uncontrollably. I tried to get up and go to work, but I could not get myself out of bed. I could not get myself to do anything. After several minutes, alone in that hospital's small, empty on-call room, I managed to phone my residency director to let him know I could not make it into work that day. I tried to be strong, telling him I just didn't feel well, but I could not hold back my tears. I apologized for feeling so overwhelmed, and I tried to convince him and myself that I would be okay, but I wasn't doing a very good job. My director heard my distress and reassuringly asked me to come to his office so that he could talk with me. I walked to the clinic from the hospital, feeling embarrassed that other residents and interns would see me cracking up and losing it. I felt there was something really wrong with me. I felt terrible that I was unable to work. I felt guilty and somehow weak. I had experienced sadness and aloneness before, but this time I just could not talk myself out of it. I could not just be positive. I could not self-motivate, and I could not pick myself up by the bootstraps. I felt helpless and knew I needed help. I made it to the director's office, where we talked for a while. After performing a physical examination, he informed me that a virus might be causing my exhaustion and my depression. We ran some blood tests, and eventually, the results showed that I did indeed have a bad case of infectious mononucleosis. He reassured me that this was the reason I was feeling so bad physically and emotionally. I did not feel reassured. In fact, I knew quite intuitively that it was the other way around. I was unhappy. I was homesick. I felt alone and isolated. I knew my physical illness was a symptom of my emotional emptiness. I knew in my heart that it was my unhappiness that predisposed me to become ill, not the other way around. I was advised to go back to my apartment and take a week off to rest. I did so, but I didn't get any better. I got more rest, but I also felt more alone. I became more ill and developed a hemolytic anemia, inflammatory hepatitis, and jaundice. I had to be hospitalized. While in the hospital, I remember for the first time feeling cared for and nurtured, especially before bedtime when the nurses would give me a soft powder back rub for a few minutes. Their touch was healing. I know now that I was starving for connection, starving to be touched physically and emotionally by people who cared about me. After 1 week in the hospital, I was well enough to be discharged, but it took me 6 more weeks to physically recover from the mono. During this time, I left my apartment on the residency campus and went to live with my dear friends, Rabbi Mitch and Sherry Wolberg, and their 2 children. There, I felt connected emotionally, connected to people and things that were meaningful and important in my life. I no longer felt alone. I no longer felt isolated. I took time to play guitar again, a long-held love of mine, and I took time to reevaluate my life. I was discouraged and disillusioned with my medical training. There seemed to be no humanity, no place for the human connection. I could not understand how we were supposed to convey caring and compassion for patients when the residency schedule required us to ignore our own physical and mental health under the guise of learning to become good doctors capable of grueling hours and abusive demands. To me, it was a form of fraternity hazing at best. I could not trust the system that preached to patients the benefits of staying balanced physically and emotionally, yet brutalized its very own practitioners with inhumane call schedules, sleep deprivation, and endless hours of busy work. I was beset by the hypocrisy. Did it make us better physicians to deny for ourselves the very health advice we were encouraged to give patients? I struggled deeply with the possibility of leaving medicine forever. I feared that the cold scientific world of medicine, with its hectic pace and brutal on-call schedule, might not be the path for me. I went into medicine because I longed to make a difference in people's lives. I loved science and was fascinated with the human body. But I also loved people and was fascinated with the human soul and the spiritual side of life. I dreamed of being the kind of doctor who offered patients not only the power of medical science, but also the power of caring, compassion, and love. After deep thought, contemplation, and soul-searching, consultation with family and friends, I decided to return to work and finish my internship. I promised myself that after finishing the year, I would take a break from medicine for a while and simply enjoy life. Emotionally, I was determined not to let myself ever feel so isolated and alone again. I made a concerted effort to stay in close touch with friends and family, as well as try to have as much fun as possible during the remainder of a grueling year. I completed my year of internship and took a 2-year break from formal training to work in a small walk-in clinic on the shores of Cohasset, Massachusetts. There, I took time to enjoy my life. I learned how to ski, started a regular exercise program, and reevaluated my life's goals and dreams. My time away from the rigors of formal training renewed the strength of my commitment to become a doctor and practice the kind of medicine I believed in, a practice blending the best of medical science with genuine care and compassion for the whole person. Why did I become so physically ill and depressed that year? In looking back, I now see so many contributing factors. Certainly, the inordinate stresses of the job were partly responsible. Under excessive physical and emotional stress, given enough time, anyone can become ill. In addition to the demands of the job, I felt alone and homesick. I missed a strong connection to people who knew and loved me. I felt isolated. Extensive research now shows the vital importance of love and social support in maintaining health and well-being. Perhaps most important of all, and underlying much of my personal experience of stress and isolation, was the cherished belief I held that if I just think positive, everything will be okay. Though hardly anyone can debate the importance of positive thinking, I deeply misunderstood the concept. I believed that positive thinking meant not acknowledging or admitting any negative thoughts or feelings. For me, admitting I felt negative, afraid, or in need of help meant that I was complaining, weak, or not good enough, all qualities I found distasteful and dared not admit. And so, I choose to be positive at the expense of experiencing, acknowledging, and expressing my honest feelings of negativity, fear, and helplessness. I pretended to be happy, strong, and in charge, when inside, I was sad, scared, and out of control. Because I believed that it was negative to express my anger, my insecurity, my fear, and my disappointment, I failed to reveal my true self and my true feelings. In that failure, I isolated myself. How could others really know what I felt when I was afraid to express my true feelings? How could I let others into my life when I did not allow myself to become vulnerable? I tried to be happy and positive on the outside because I felt ashamed that people would not like me or want to be with me if I was negative, weak, vulnerable, or afraid. I was homesick because I did not truly know how to reveal myself to others and allow them into my heart. My fear of looking bad kept me from feeling good. The pain of my limiting beliefs is what propelled me on a journey of self-discovery, seeking new understandings and new beliefs about my life. I now know that it is our vulnerability, our honest expression of who we are, what we feel and believe, that is the very foundation of all intimacy, healing, and relationship. Sometimes we can be surrounded by love but fail to let it in, leaving ourselves alone and afraid. Feeling homesick is not measured by our distance from home, but rather by our distance from the heart. We must all come to recognize the beliefs we hold, which empower fear to close the door to our hearts, preventing others from loving, caring, and connecting with us. The power of honest self-expression. What I have clearly learned in life is that mature positive thinking comes from our willingness to openly face our long-held fears, negative beliefs, and judgmental attitudes. Without this acknowledgement, without this ownership, negativity is simply denied and pushed underground, sprouting up later as illness or dis-ease. There is a humorous Woody Allen quote which, roughly paraphrased, goes, "I never allow myself to get angry. I just keep it inside and grow a tumor instead." This quip is not far from the truth, as we will explore together later in this book. The new field of mind-body medicine, or psychoneuroimmunology, now provides the scientific evidence showing us how isolation and aloneness are at the heart of so much unnecessary illness and suffering. As regards our psychological attitudes, a most fascinating finding is that simple positive thinking will not necessarily keep us well, nor will negative thinking necessarily make us ill. Rather, it is honest self-expression that results in the greatest healing. Studies show that the honest expression of emotion, whether it be negative, like fear, anger, resentment, and jealousy, or positive, like happiness, peacefulness, joy, and laughter, results in an increase in the number and activity of natural killer cells. These cells are an important component of our immune system, offering a first line of defense by destroying viruses and tumor cells. There is danger to our body in repressing anger and resentment in the guise of being positive. There is also danger to our body in the inappropriate dumping or overexpression of anger, resentment, and hostility. But there is a middle ground of honest self-expression, where we are neither dumping nor repressing, neither dwelling nor denying. Honest self-expression allows us to realize our blessings, even as we acknowledge the fear, pain, sadness, and loss inherent in a full and vital life. Honest self-expression is an acquired skill and can be learned by even the most cynical, fearful, and hostile among us. But it is also a skill that requires tremendous courage. Honest self-expression represents a true voyage of discovery and exemplifies what Joseph Campbell calls the hero's journey. Honest self-expression demands the ability to see ourselves as we are, without apology and without pretense. It also demands the ability to see ourselves as we may be, in all our glorious potential, without apology and without pretense. Marcel Proust, the renowned writer, once said, "The real voyage of discovery consists not in seeking new landscapes, but in having new eyes." This is the voyage of honest self-expression, to be able to see ourselves with new eyes, eyes that refuse to deny the truth of our frailties and humanness, and eyes that refuse to deny the innocence, strength, courage, and love that lie within each one of us. Honest self-expression is the skill I lacked during my internship, a skill that might have given me the opportunity to stay well. My belief in positive thinking, though well-intentioned, prevented me from expressing my discontent and disappointment in a way that I could feel positive and connected to people, as well as to my own ideals. My belief prevented me from being real, honest, and emotionally available for love, commitment, and community. My belief kept me feeling isolated and alone. I have spent the last 20-plus years trying to better understand how the appropriate and honest expression of emotion helps us live healthier, happier, and more joyous lives. It is in my pursuit of this balanced phase of honest self-expression that I have written this book. I am firmly convinced that by discovering, acknowledging, and eliminating negative beliefs, and choosing and cultivating new, positive, and empowering beliefs in their place, we can heal our isolation, minimize illness, and achieve a greater sense of emotional happiness, mental calmness, and spiritual well-being. At the same time, we need to understand that negative beliefs are not bad. Both positive and negative beliefs can heal us. Positive beliefs engender hope and possibility, which engage and activate our healing system. Negative beliefs heal us in the feedback they provide. Suffering the consequences of our negative or disempowering beliefs is what leads us to grow and change. Sometimes when I am in pain and struggling with an issue in my life, I confide in my dear friend and mentor, Rick Nyberg, who often says, tongue-in-cheek, "May God grant you more suffering." Then he smiles and tells me not to take myself so seriously, knowing that our suffering often empowers us to give up our limiting beliefs, allowing us to find greater love, honesty, and compassion in our lives. We're all wounded healers. The soulful poet and author Robert Bly speaks eloquently in his book Iron John of a scene where a young boy dips his wounded finger into a stream in order to soothe its aching. When the boy pulls his finger from the stream, the tip turns to gold. The symbolism suggests that our gold is where our wound is, that our deepest treasure, our deepest gifts, comes from the place where we are most wounded. This has certainly been true in my life. I tell my story now not to bemoan my ignorance or wish that I might have done things differently, but rather to share my own story of woundedness as the gift that it has been in my life. Without my own suffering, I may never have achieved the level of sensitivity and awareness I now have of how emotional and spiritual issues affect our physical health. I might never have learned how to become more honest in expressing who I really am and what I really feel in a way that empowers and develops me, rather than endangers and destroys me. We must all tell our stories of woundedness, not from a place of regret, but from a place of compassion, which is a measure of our ability to understand the lack of understanding. When we share our pain, we increase our treasure, we increase our gold. We join each other in a common humanity and honesty that allows us to address our fears, frustrations, and hurts. In this way, we are all at last empowered to help make the world a more loving and beautiful place in which to live, a garden of peace, a dwelling of joy for God's very presence. Passing by a man who was born blind from birth, the students asked their master, "Master, was it this man or his parents who sinned?" The master replied, "It was not this man who sinned or his parents, but that the works of God might be made visible in him." We are all blinded, wounded in some way, whether by ignorance, anger, hurt, shame, or desire. And as we go through life, we begin to realize that in our blindedness, we may inadvertently or mistakenly cause pain to ourselves or others. But the pain of our blindedness, of our woundedness, is not a punishment for anything we have done wrong. It is an opportunity to be more loving, more compassionate, more godlike in our character and behavior. We must not blame ourselves or others for our blind spots. We must instead use them to learn how to see. All healing involves making the invisible visible. In so doing, we realize that our blindedness is temporary, and with effort, determination, and grace, we can one day open our eyes and see that which we could not previously see. This is how we become more loving and more compassionate. Let's move on now to discuss how journaling can become a vehicle for honest self-expression, allowing us to move towards greater health and healing in our lives.